Future You presents Imagining the Future, The Calliston Cycle, a Future You program. Proof by Gary Lonsborough. Read by Joseph Althaus. There's a view of Jupiter out of the skylight. It's clear enough to see the cloud shifting across its surface. My mathematics classroom is at half capacity, and the only person in the front row coughs three times before raising his hand.
Yes?
Miss Mac asks.
Can I go to the medical bay, please?
The boy asks. Miss Mac sighs, then nods. The boy stumbles out the door, his hand pressed against his chest. I haven't managed to remember his name yet, and it's 3 days into the first week of high school. So many people have been getting sick lately, including my friend, Alicia. There must be a flu going around the outpost. I kind of wish I was sick too, so I could get out of this place. The bell sounds for lunch and I follow the others out of the classroom, through the corridor and onto the playground, which is covered in plastic grass with a tall replica eucalyptus tree at the center. The artificial sun burns orange and its warmth sneaks through the glass. Across the playground, the teacher patrols, surveying everyone. Some kids kick around a ball on the grass. Other groups of friends and couples hang out on the seats and tables. Some laugh and hold their stomachs. Some whisper into each other's ears. Some are pointing upwards towards Jupiter. The gassy surface moves like shifting sand of many different colours, blown by the wind. I fasten the straps of my backpack on my shoulders and head to the end of the playground. I don't want to be here. I push the gate open and walk out of the school. The road I walk along is paved with recycled materials that are cracked and fading. They usually resurface it every year, but I haven't seen them working on it in ages. I pass by the convenience store, where a sign out the front declares they are having a special on roast beef puree. A waste truck drives by. Its gravity wheels make clunking sounds. It booms along the road, headed outside the base to the waste recycling center beyond the outer fringes. There's no one walking around. Some of the shops are closed. Must be because of the sickness. I pass the Earth Museum. I wonder what it would be like to be on Earth and to go to school there. Maybe it would be easier to make friends. With that many people, there must be some who are more like me. I glance up at the sky. Beyond the dark blue hue of the dome, the stars are shining. One of those shining stars could be Earth for all I know. My house is on the outskirts of town. The dome's edge sits beyond the artificial bush behind our backyard. My house is rectangular, with two square windows at the side of the dining room and the side of the living room. I head to the front door and let myself inside. In the living room is Maisie, my older sister Rachel's android. She is metal and human-shaped, a tad taller than me. She has a red sensor at the tip of her nose for scanning.
Welcome home, Tanner,
Maisie says.
You're back earlier than expected.
The school finished early, I say, throwing my backpack to the floor. I head over to the couch and surrender to the cushions. TV on. The news is playing on the feed, streamed from the space station near Mars.
There have been no notifications of school finishing early today,
Maisie says.
Were you provided with the reason for the premature closure?
No, I reply. Maisie is always questioning everything, but the thought hasn't even occurred to her that I might have lied. She's an older model, due for an upgrade, but Rachel won't trade her in.
Our congratulations to Shyla Lee in the Mars Outpost, who has just celebrated her 150th birthday.
The two women on the news are boring. Their voices are monotonous, and they don't blink their eyes, which is weird. Maybe I'm just not noticing their eyes blinking. A picture of Shyla Lee comes onto the screen. There are plenty of wrinkles on her face, but her smile is wide and warm. I can't imagine being that old. I'm only 15 now. I can't imagine having that many years of memories. I can't imagine having that many wrinkles on my face. I can't imagine my face broadcast across the solar system with an unblinking newsreader congratulating me on turning 150 years old. The back door opens and I hear boots stomping towards the living room.
Tanner, why aren't you at school?
It's the voice of my older sister, Rachel.
School has finished early today for an unspecified reason,
Maisie says. I glance over my shoulder to see Rachel standing in the doorway. Her black hair is tied back and she's got her travelling suit on, except for the helmet.
Why are you really home early? She asks.
I sigh. I can lie to Maisie like a reflex, but I can't lie to Rachel.
My friend is sick, I say. She's been sick all week and no one else there likes me. I didn't want to be there anymore.
Tanner, Rachel sighs. She walks over to me and sits on the armrest of our couch.
You shouldn't skip school. School's important. Where are you going?
I ask.
Oh,
she says, looking down at her travel suit.
I'm heading out to the research center, to the filtration system. I have a hunch about something, but I need to test the water first.
Maybe I could come, I say.
It would be good field learning for me.
She sees me looking over her suit. I widen my eyes and smile. Whatever she's doing will be more interesting than the news.
Get your suit then, Rachel says.
I jump from the couch and run outside to the shed. Mum and Dad never let me leave the base. My travel suit is pretty much sitting in the backyard, growing old. I take my suit from the hooks. I climb into the bottom half and shuffle my feet into the boots. I pull the top half over my body and zip the top and the bottom together at my waist. I take my helmet from its hook and race back inside, where Rachel and Maisie are waiting by the front door.
Don't rush off anywhere without me,
Rachel says,
and do whatever I say. Got it?
Yes. I follow Rachel and Maisie to the garage and we climb into her Explorer. The big gravity wheels sound like rumbling rocks as we head along the road through town, past school, and to the outer gates. Rachel shows her pass to the guard. The wall comes down behind us and we put on our helmets. The gate opens in front of us, rising above our heads.
Adjusting temperature,
the AI in my travel suit says. It's a robotic voice, unlike Maisie's. Her voice has more personality. She's not just reading lines. I swear she actually thinks before she speaks. My suit adjusts my temperature as small icy marks appear on the windows of the Explorer. The sky looks different outside the outpost. It's darker and deeper, less filtered when not covered by the dome.
I haven't been out of the base for so long,
I say. I gaze out of the window as we drive around one of the deepest craters of Callisto's surface. The light doesn't reach into the very center and all I see is shadow. We follow the road until we reach the borders of the Valhalla crater. At the center of the crater is the research center. It's a big square building that looks like a silver box on the outside. Beside the garage are big trucks filled with filtered and purified water. We follow the icy road down Valhalla. I'm first out of the Explorer. My body is lighter outside the outpost, and each step feels like a little jump on the rocky surface. Rachel and Maisie get out and I follow them to the front door. My breath is warm inside the helmet, I can feel the cold of outside threatening to break through my suit. Rachel stops at the control panel and the red light comes on.
Rachel Landley,
she says. The red light turns blue.
Identity verified.
The robotic voice from the control panel says. The door opens and we step into the pressure room. The door closes behind us and oxygen floods the room. The beep signals to us that it's safe to take our helmets off. The air is warm and thick inside the research center. It feels like I've got a warm blanket around my body.
Come on, we need to check the water,
Rachel says. I follow her and Maisie to a door with filtration written on it. Inside, a machine churns and chugs in the center of the big room, which is more like a warehouse. Rachel presses a button and the machine slows to a silent stop. She takes a test tube and a syringe from a drawer and opens a small hose on the machine.
This is where the water passes through before it begins the filtration cycle, she says.
Your grandparents were the pioneers,
Maisie says.
When the population began to boom on Callisto, so did the need for a more sophisticated water purification system. Your grandparents led the team who created this incredible machine.
Yeah, I've heard this story before.
I sigh. I know my grandparents were smart. I know my parents are smart. I know my sister is smart. And I know I'm not. Rachel uses the syringe to draw out some of the water, which she then deposits into the test tube. She takes a dipstick from the desk and places it into the test tube.
Have you been noticing there's a sickness going around?
Rachel asks me.
Yeah, lots of people at school are off sick. I think it's got to do with the water,
Rachel says.
The filters should be purifying the water as it's pumped up from beneath the surface, but something's off.
I shake my head.
Maybe the moon is melting.
Rachel glances up at me and then back to the results.
My biggest worry was that the radiation belt from Jupiter was messing with the system, but maybe you're right.
What? I ask.
You think I'm right about the moon melting?
Rachel chuckles.
No. I mean, I think you're onto something about the moon. The answer is here. Our ancestors were the oldest living culture on Earth. They survived for thousands of years because they listened to the land. We need to do the same here. We have to listen to Callisto. She's telling us she's sick.
Rachel leans into me.
Last week, I trailed one of the waste trucks to the outer regions. Something's wrong because the recycling facility was dead. There were no aircraft and no activity inside that Maisie could detect. The lights were off. The waste truck continued past the center.
What are you saying?
Nothing,
Rachel says.
I just have a hunch.
Rachel takes her tablet device from the pocket of her suit. She places it on the table. Lines and shapes cover the tablet screen and spirals and strokes.
Feel like going on an adventure?
Rachel asks me. I nod. We fasten our helmets and head back to the Explorer. Rachel has the glint in her eye that tells me she's excited about something.
So, where are we going?
I ask.
There's this network of caves I found 2 years ago when I first started at the research center,
Rachel says. She follows the digital map on the navigator and we drive away, along the road and further from the base.
I was trying to map them, but then I was ordered to stop. They didn't give me much more of a reason than it's unsafe. I've always wondered why.
Rachel drives us to the side of one of the craters. We park and ahead of us, I see the entrance to the cave. Rachel is first out of the Explorer with her backpack. I follow her and Maisie. Rachel ignites her torch and we walk into the cave. Darkness quickly falls all around us.
We need to start listening to Callisto,
Rachel says again.
It's a dead moon,
I say. My voice echoes inside my helmet.
So they said,
Rachel replies.
We know that the surface has no activity, but beneath, There's a whole world to explore.
The cave slopes downward. Rachel's steady as she follows the path, but my boot slips and I skid along the icy ground. I knock Rachel and we slide down the tunnel like a slippery dip. Maisie's lights come on as she rolls behind us. Rachel's torch disappears into a dark hole and I fall down another with Maisie right behind me. Maisie grips a spike and stops above me. I slide further down, but I reach out my hand and manage to grip a rock. I'm hanging from the rock, trapped in the dark tunnel.
Rachel!
I call out.
Rachel!
There's no answer. The light from Maisie brightens in the tunnel and small pieces of ice pitter-patter over my suit.
Are you hurt, Tanner?
Maisie asks. My heart is pounding in my chest and my fast breathing is fogging my helmet.
No, I'm okay.
I reply.
Where'd Rachel go?
She fell down another chute. I'm tracking her now.
The light on Maisie's chest dims, then brightens, then dims.
I've located her.
Maisie says,
we must continue down the pathway.
No way,
I say. A splintering sound rings out beside my head. I turn to see the ice cracking like an egg. A piece of it chips away from the wall. There's something moving where the crack has formed. It breaks through the next layer of ice. It's small but meaty and wriggly. Its skin is white with tiny black spots. It looks like something I saw in one of our Earth Studies classes. Like a worm. My eyes open wider than they've ever opened before and I worry my eyeballs might fall out. I'm still. I don't want to move in case I scare it. The light glistens on its slimy-looking skin like melting ice. I grip the rock tighter and gaze at the Callisto worm.
Life beyond Earth,
Maisie says.
Natural life beyond Earth.
The worm springs onto my helmet. The surprise makes me lose my grip on the rock and I slide down the tunnel. Maisie falls after me and grips the suit in my chest. Her other arm spears the wall and she holds me there. More ice begins to split beside us and another worm leaps onto Maisie's body. Then another, and another. The worm on my helmet is stuck right above my eyes. Its mouth opens and its small teeth bite at my helmet. I scream and Maisie releases her hold on the wall. We continue sliding down the tunnel. The worm on my helmet detaches. Maisie crashes into me and her lights are like sparks in the blackness. We roll and slide and then we fall. I land bumper. Maisie lands beside me. My back stings hot, but I don't have time to be hurt. The worms fall from the tunnel and rain down on us. I use my elbows to lift myself up and struggle to my feet. I shuffle backwards as the worms begin to slither along the icy ground. They're not interested in me anymore, though. I watch them as they wriggle slowly away towards the shadows. I hear the scuff of a boot, and the beam of a torch appears. Rachel is standing in the far corner of the cave. Frozen icicles stand spiky along the ground and hang from the ceiling. I race towards her, pointing to the ground behind me.
Rachel, there are worms here. Have you seen them?
I say.
They're harmless,
Rachel replies.
We've known about them for a while. We thought they were dead all this time, but they're alive.
Rachel removes a container from her bag and places the open side over one of the worms. She slides the lid underneath and packs the worm into her bag.
They're not used to the temperatures. It's not as cold as it once was. The temperature of Callisto has risen since humankind arrived here, and that must be how they've woken up.
Nearby, Maisie moves towards one of the walls, and her light penetrates the ice. There, frozen within it, I can see cans and bags, bottles, old food scraps. Rubbish.
Disgusting, isn't it?
Rachel says.
The recycling facility is out of order, just as I thought. They've been using the caves to dispose of waste.
She takes out a pickaxe and hammers into the ice floor.
I think I've figured out why sickness is ravaging the outpost.
She makes a hole in the ice and beneath is slow-flowing gel-like water.
The underground ocean of Callisto?
I ask. Rachel nods. She removes a netted pan from her backpack and lowers it into the water. Water flows through the net steadily.
The filtration system Grandma and Grandpa made purifies the water from the underground ocean so that it's drinkable. It creates an exact copy of the fresh water from Earth. But the water doesn't change without these.
Rachel removes the pan from the water. Caught within the netting are small rocks, half the size of my pinky fingernail.
What are those?
I ask.
Callisto crystals,
Rachel says.
They're kind of like a technician for the water here. The crystals tell the water how to behave. When we modify the crystals with our coating, they tell the water how to change so that we can drink it. The crystals glow in their natural state.
I take one of the crystals from the net and hold it in the palm of my glove.
These aren't glowing,
I say.
No, it's like they've lost their power.
They're dormant,
Maisie says. Rachel rushes to the cave walls, shining her light over the waste frozen into the ice. She follows the trail downward to the corner of the cave.
It's us,
she says.
It's our waste that's shutting down the crystals. They've gone to sleep because they're not coping. And because the crystals are sick, so are the people who drink the water.
I ask.
That's why everyone's getting sick.
Lights flash from Maisie's eyes over the crystals, then the walls.
Maisie's taking photographs,
Rachel says.
We'll show them to the research centre. These photos are our proof that the waste recyclers have been storing our waste in the caves instead of recycling.
Rachel places the crystals into the small pouch of her backpack.
If these crystals are what is making people sick, there must be a way to use them to make people better. It's possible,
Rachel replies.
There's a purifying power in these crystals. We'll learn how to harness it.
Maisie detaches two ropes from her back casing, and Rachel and I hold onto them as Maisie climbs to the surface. We load back into the Explorer and start for the research center. Rachel steers us around the cave crater and we head onto the road. I think about that boy at school who was sick this morning. So many people are sick. We'll get the caves clean. We'll get the crystals glowing again. The worms will return to their place in the ice and the sickness in the outpost will end. When I get back to school, I'll remember that boy's name. I'll make sure of it. You've been listening to Proof by Gary Lonsborough, read by Joseph Althaus. Sound design by Veronica Rasner. Original composition by Freya Burkout. Story editor Kate Whitfield. Proof was produced by Dan Pritchard. And directed by Dan Pritchard and Veronica Rasner. Proof is the fourth story in the Callistan cycle as part of Imagining the Future. Imagining the Future is a program of Future You, an initiative of the Office of Australia's Women in STEM Ambassador. For more information, go to futureyouaustralia.com. Thanks for listening and
See you in the future.